it reason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't marching anymore.
Makes a positive difference in all our lives. Thank you for supporting this effort to keep Portland vital and engaged. Thank you for keeping Portland radical, and thank you for supporting KBOO.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for keeping KBOO fierce, vital, and independent, accountable to no one but you, the community.
Happy birthday!
The Oregon Historical Society is featuring 50 years of KBOO. The exhibit was created to relay our history and demonstrate the importance of community radio, featuring archival photographs and ephemera collected from KBOO's 5 decades of broadcasting. The exhibit tells our story in our members' own collective words. Our online tour features highlights from the exhibit and companion audio clips to enrich visitors' experiences. The exhibit runs until July 29th at the Oregon Historical Society at 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information and audio clips can be found at 50yearsofkboo.fm.
And this is KBOO Portland. It has just turned 10:01 a.m., which means it's time for Valley Views, featuring a conversation with Faith Reidenbach, co-founder of Showing Up for Racial Justice. We're going to follow that with Flashpoints and round out the morning at 11 with Project Censored, discussing the Me Too campaign and how corporate media portrays sexual harassment and violence. And now, as promised, Valley Views.
Hi, I'm Dale Holliday, coming to you from Corvallis, Oregon, in the bountiful Willamette Valley. Welcome to my show, Valley Views, a forum for sharing relevant topics relating to people and issues in the Willamette region. Good morning, people. I'm here today with Faith Reidenbach. She's from Philomath, which is a small city just south of Corvallis. I consider Faith to be a friend, and we've had many discussions about race. Faith is a white woman, and she's done what I wish more white people would do. She's taken opportunities to talk about race with other white people. I asked Faith to be on this show because I thought that her story about her journey regarding how she became interested in racial justice issues might be very educational and enlightening and interesting for our listeners. So, welcome, Faith.
Thanks for having me here, Dale.
Absolutely. It's nice to have you here. Well, I'd like to kick this off by just being very honest about my experiences and what I found in talking about race to many white people. They are very uncomfortable with the subject. I'm not saying all are, but very many are uncomfortable with the subject, or maybe they are in denial that we still have racial problems and tensions and discrimination in this country, and they just don't want to hear about it. So I'd like to just kick off the conversation by asking you, what prompted you as a white woman to be concerned about racial issues and racial justice issues, Faith?
When I talk to white people, most of us go back to our childhoods, and that's what I'm going to do, or at least my teenagehood. I was in high school when my school district started busing kids.
Mm-hmm.
The actual busing started after I left, after I graduated. But there was a couple years where there was optional busing.
Okay.
And the parents who chose to send their kids to my very white upper class high school were the parents of the top achieving kids,
mm-hmm.
and the parents of the lowest achieving kids, because I don't know why those kids came, to tell you the truth.
Right.
But that's what happened.
Uh-huh.
So, and these were black kids. And we had had previously one black kid in our school.
Out of about how many? Yeah.
Well, there, there were 500 in my class, so okay. There were about
1,500. One black kid.
Well, one kid in my class, at least.
Yes.
And we call him a mulatto.
Oh.
When we talked about him, no one that I ever saw talked to him to his face.
My God.
He was the most isolated kid.
Oh, yeah.
I can ever imagine.
And I've heard so many stories like that. The one black kid in the, you know, hundreds of kids. Yes,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
We had a few Vietnamese kids.
Uh-huh.
Who were, you know, being assisted by social services.
Right.
So that was our diversity. Until these bust kids came.
Uh-huh.
And it was amazing to me because some of them were in my advanced placement classes.
Mm-hmm.
That was not something I knew about, that black kids could be that smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, then my senior year, I was student council president, and all the presidents from all the schools in the city, which was Columbus, Ohio, got to go on a trip. It was sponsored by some patriotic group, and we went out to, like, Gettysburg, and we saw the Liberty Bell.
Uh-huh.
And on that trip, I got to know the president of a school that was completely black on the east side of my town. You know, it's on the north side. It's very clear, you know, where the neighborhood is.
Yes, where those lines are, yeah.
And he was also, you know, one of the smartest people that I had met and had political ambitions, and he was going to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a lot to talk about. At that time, that was what I was going to be, a lawyer. And he talked to me about the most troubled school in the district, which was half black and half white. He said, Faith, that's where you get the problems.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. When you mix it up there.
When you mix it up.
Yeah.
He said, my black high school is... We do not have riots, like they were literally having riots at that time.
Oh, yeah.
We, you know, we have a very stable, achieving school.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my introduction, frankly, to any black.
So you were talking to this black student, and he said there wasn't any problem in his high school, because it was all black, and when things start getting mixed up, that's when there's a problem.
Right.
Yeah.
And I saw that later, too, in neighborhoods, because I lived then later in that neighborhood that had that high school.
Uh-huh, the black high school.
I was somewhat distant from it, from the mixed high school.
Oh, right, right.
And it was rougher than I expected. There were plenty of white people, which is what I saw.
Right.
But it wasn't completely white.
Right, right. Yeah, I remember a friend of mine was doing busing, not doing busing, but she lived in Boston, and her first year as a teacher, her first day as a teacher was when they were starting the busing in South Boston.
Oh, boy.
She said it was like it was like a war zone.
Mm.
So that was her introduction to teaching.
And this was a white woman?
Oh, yeah, and she was a white woman, yes, yes. Yeah. Irish from South Boston. So, yeah. So what did that, that interaction, so then you moved to this area near the mixed school, you said, or was working there or something?
Well, I only lived there a short while.
Mm-hmm.
My next most important experience was moving to Cleveland.
Okay.
The city of Cleveland itself is black majority.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And I lived in a suburb, what they called an inner ring suburb, that had a policy that was designed to integrate the neighborhood.
Mm, okay.
My partner and I, at that time, were buying our first house. And we found out that if we bought a house on a street that was white eligible, that we could get a lower mortgage rate.
Okay.
They had figured out down to the street level.
Oh, yeah.
Which streets needed more white families.
Uh-huh.
Needed more black families in order to balance things, because that's what there is in Ohio.
Okay.
That part of Ohio, black and white.
Okay.
There's no Native people to speak of.
Okay.
Or Latinos.
So they were trying to get a 50-50 mix, or
I don't
probably
know.
Yeah.
I don't know about it. I never heard about Asian people. But it was black eligible or white eligible. So we picked a street that was white eligible. Also, a lot of gay people.
Yes. Yes.
And so I lived right next door to a black family for the first time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And my neighbor had a very nice yard and garden. And we did not. I'm not a gardener. And she would try to help us spruce it up. And the other times I saw her were when her family came over for parties in their backyard.
Yeah.
And they were so much livelier than any parties that my family ever has.
Livelier how?
Well, music-wise, volume-wise, of talking, and, you know, the pitch of people's talk. That was the first time I really paid attention to, I don't know how to name that. But, you know, it's more musical.
Animated.
And then she and her daughters would leave for church, and they'd have, you know, these beautiful dresses and hats.
Yeah, oh yeah, you dress up for church.
So at the time, this actually was a separate, very influential experience. I was volunteering for a group called the Women's Community Foundation of Cleveland. And they had quotas on the allocations committee. It's what I was on.
Okay.
So many black women, so many Latino women, so many old women, so many lesbians.
Okay.
So I filled a lesbian quota.
Okay.
But it was run by two black women who were the chairs of this.
Right.
And I got to know them. Well, I heard about things like black women were at higher risk of breast cancer. Black women have trouble buying pants because their rear ends are bigger than European women's. All the pants are geared toward European women.
Yeah.
So, just little factoids like that.
That you'd never heard of before. New to your world, yes.
But, you know, the mission of the allocations committee was to find projects, you know, a diversity of projects to fund. And there were a lot of groups in that city that were doing things that I, you know, had never heard about.
Yeah.
Well, so anyway, I got to know the chair, the one who is a lesbian, a black lesbian woman, named Meeston Gett Smith. And I said to her one day, I wish I was black, which I thought would be a great compliment to her. I said, black culture is so much more fun. Meeston Gett's about, she is fully 6 feet tall. She drew herself up. Looked down at me.
Yes.
I'm 5'1". And said, you need to study your whiteness. And you need to learn about your ancestry. And she was not being unkind.
Right.
She was smiling at me, and then she helped me. She gave me a reading list of some books to read. These weren't about whiteness. These were about, these were literature, actually, by people of color. In fact, my very first book was Push by Sapphire, a lesbian writer, that was later made into the movie Precious. And it was written all in, like, street dialect. It was kind of hard to read. And then we would have lunch and talk about these books. I didn't last a really long time because she was busy. But it was enough to get me started.
Yeah, that's a starting point. That must have been shocking to hear her say that. You need to learn about your whiteness.
Well,
that, I mean, it's such a flip. Yes.
Oh,
you never even heard the word.
Oh,
interesting.
I didn't know what she meant. And I didn't read about whiteness.
Yeah.
It took me a long time.
Yeah. And I do hear white people, they don't realize their whiteness because they've been surrounded in this culture by that's the default, that's the norm. So you're in this pool of normalcy, quote unquote. And so you don't see any reason to call it out as anything but what should be.
Right.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until 2014 that I started reading about whiteness.
Yeah. Well, that's that. We're going to talk about that again later. So this has been a great setting to talk about your early days and whatnot, and then that turning point about where a black woman says, you know, you need to talk, you know, study your whiteness to understand what you're seeing in blackness. So we're going to end here, folks, with this part of the conversation with Faith. And I hope you join me again next week when Faith and I will be back and continue this discussion about race and race politics and her journey into that type of awareness. Thanks. for listening. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Valley Views. I'm your host, Dale Holliday, and I'd love to hear from you. Comments, questions, ideas for future topics, or other matters you would like explored. Email me at valleyviews@kboo.org. That's valleyvious@kboo.org. Special thanks to Chad Howard from Corvallis Access Media for his technical assistance and support. I look forward to being with you again next time. And remember, as Doctor Who once said, I'm not in charge, but I'm full of ideas. Bye! You've been listening to Valley Views. I'm your host, Dale Holliday, and I'd love to hear from you. Comments, questions, ideas for future topics, or other matters you would like explored. Email me at valleyviews@kboo.org. That's valleyvious@kboo.org. Special thanks to Chad Howard from Corvallis Access Media for his technical assistance and support. I look forward to being with you again next time. And remember, as Doctor Who once said, I'm not in charge, but I'm full of ideas. Bye.
Flashpoint, 50 years after the My Lai massacre, we'll speak to Colonel